URL publishes on a non-monthly basis. The magazine subscriptions are kind of a thing of the 20th century. I haven't heard a new magazine announced in easily 20 years, and a lot of my magazines that I loved have faded away since even before then. The computer magazines, of course, went first because those were the first guy who shifted into web pages, and the rest, as ad revenue dropped and subscription rates dropped, those disappeared. But yeah, for the people out there who have problems with physical copies, a lot of magazines will sell you a electronic subscription, and you can put it up on a computer screen or an iPad or what have you, and it doesn't take up any space. So there's a solution for that as well.
Yeah, that I do have. And these days, my eyesight has become so poor, it's a lot easier for me to read stuff electronically. I can usually print size I want, and when I get higher than that, I can have the computer read it for me. So I read just about everything electronically in some form these days. So I do get the electronic subscriptions. Yeah, I mean, Wayne Green is an interesting person, an interesting ham. He was a pioneering radar operator on a submarine, and the inspiration for characters in a couple of submarine novels, I think. His politics were off the wall. Today he'd be right at home with a lot of hams, unfortunately. I do remember the magazine well when I was a kid.
Yeah, he is, politely you would call him a character. But, you know, I mean, really kind of a clever, smart, innovative character. Byte Magazine, it was one of the first magazines, was dedicated to personal computer. And it was very well written. It looked really professional. It was beautiful. The paper, the print, everything, I had no problem with it. Unfortunately, he had problems with the missus and the inevitable divorce. They split the publishing business in half. She took Byte and didn't quite know what to do with it. So it was probably one of the first personal PC magazines to go out of business. Not because it was a magazine, but I don't know. She just didn't quite know what to do with it. But I've heard stories. I never really subscribed to 73, and he wasn't very political in Byte, so I never got quite the sense of how much of a character he truly was. But every generation has their characters, for good or for bad.
Yeah, I think my favorite issue of 73, and the one I had on my desk as a kid for quite a while, was the cover photo of his wife in a bikini holding an HT. One of his wives, and that was probably the missus that, took the gold mine and gave him the shaft as they...
Oh, well, what can you do? And, yeah, I mean, I even made allowances. CQ was not the greatest amateur radio magazine. You know, talk about its kind of lack of technical expertise. There's a guy who did the monthly antenna articles. He was an acquaintance of Dick. Dick knew him, and we would kind of talk about this guy. And, you know, he got something totally wrong. He was trying to explain how antennas work, and he didn't understand or know about end effects on center-fed dipoles, and he screwed it up. And I emailed him and the publisher, and instead of checking their work, he cited an article that he said the same thing about 10 years earlier as a source material. So I just kind of up on the whole thing of, you know, trying to get people to understand stuff.
Don't you love it when you point out an error in the citation they give you for support? Here's an article a couple of years before. I've heard of I've heard of that boy a number of places these days. Go ahead.
Yeah, that was Kent Britton, I remember. I don't remember his call sign. And Dick, who was the nicest, sweetest, most you know, polite guy in the world, said, yeah, Kent kind of learned about antennas through practice. He's not a theoretical type of a guy. So, you know, I tried to correct, you know, I have this unfortunate tendency to do that. I'll occasionally do that with books that I read. If there's a way of getting to the author and he said something was wrong, I remember there was something I read where he cited the Kitty Genovese crime case, where the story was that she screamed bloody murder through the neighborhood and no one came out to help her, which was actually proven to be wrong. It was a paper guy who kind of made up most of that. So I emailed the guy and he said, yeah, you're right. If I ever do a reprint, I'll fix it the next time around. But not good old Kent, you know. He's going to stick to his bridges.
Yeah, I heard this story many times about the case, excuse me, in Queens years ago, where the woman screamed presumably for 7 minutes and nobody came out to see what was going on. I did not remember that the story had been refuted, though.
Remember two to zoom with Charlie?
Yes, John.
Yeah, just as an aside, I lived in Queens. I remember that story very well. And when they came out with the documentary about it in the movie theaters, I went to see it. And to see it in the movie at Morris Hills, which was probably about a block and a half, 2 blocks away maybe, if my memory serves me, from where the incident took place. And it was, I tell you, I'm really glad I went, because not only was the documentary great, which I think you can get it on YouTube now, but her brother, Kitty Genovese's brother, was there, and also was the cop who arrested the guy who killed her. An old man, retired, and the first cop. And there were some inaccuracies there also about the arrest. Nothing big, but it was just incredible. You know, they had the question-answer session after the movie, and you know, one of those events in life that you'll always remember. And I always like to go to that bar right across the street where the incident, right in front, I think, of where the incident. It's a very nice place. But I just wanted to throw that in there.
Well, I didn't have as close a connection to the story. But a lot of times the press gets things wrong, and if the incorrect version is much more dramatic, people are very slow to correct their errors, just because the fake story sounds so much better than the real one. But, you know, ultimately, when people correct the history, you should kind of make a point of documenting that if you're going to bring up a subject. But a lot of people rely on their memories. Memories can be faulty, and memories don't necessarily have the right answer, you know, because things are subject, interpretations and stories tend to change over time for sundry reasons. But, yeah, unfortunately, I'm the guy who writes corrective letters to authors. My niece, who is a copyright editor, told me that is bad style on my part. I should be more polite than correct authors.
Yeah, some aspects of the case that I don't think were covered, and I don't remember them, were even more fascinating, more dramatic. Which I didn't know was that he attacked her, and then forgive me, this was quite a while ago, but. He attacked her, and then somebody came along, and he left. And when they interviewed him, he says that I thought the guy wasn't going to call anybody. So he came back, and that's when he finished her off. And, so there was boys in there. It was a hell of a documentary. I recommend to anybody who's interested in it. Even if you weren't, you'll love the documentary. And they interviewed that little neighbors. They did it in such great detail. They interviewed the neighbors that lived there, and they actually hired a former professional actress at 3 o'clock in the morning to start screaming bloody, you know, death, to see, you know, how well people could have heard it, etc. They put a sign before that in the neighborhood warning people that they were going to do it, and the movie, etc. So, you know, they really did a heck of a job on it. It was, a heck of a documentary, and like I said, having that question answer with her grub, was a Vietnam vet. Told a heck of a story where he was pinned down in the rice paddy, he's taking bullets, and he was taking a kitty, and it goes, "Third end," and in a wheelchair. He might have lost his leg, if I remember. It's just an unbelievable story, and the story haunted him the rest of his life.
Yeah, that was a dramatic. The incorrect version was a very dramatic story that kind of sold the point that people felt that needed to be sold repeatedly, which amounted to people are not good. There are good people. There are bad people. There are cultural aspects. Well, not that it has anything to do with Queens, but Chinese man, they've brought up a couple of generations of Chinese citizens who don't involve themselves in anything. So, you know, if someone falls down, they just walk past, unfortunately, because they kind of learn for generations that if you get involved, somehow it ends up helping you in any way, shape, or form. So there are cultural biases as well. And probably if you're in trouble in a small town, there's more personal connections, more likely to come to your help than if it's a stranger that you might have noticed once or twice in passing in 5 years and such. So, it was kind of an object lesson that wasn't quite accurate at the time. But, hopefully we won't hear any of those types of stories anymore.
Hopefully, but hopefully we will. But, we can hope. That's for sure. And just when you're talking about the Chinese, there are many videos that you can Google. The 45-year-old woman, she looks like somebody's mother, walks across the street, gets walloped by a car, and the car keeps going, and the people keep walking. So you're right. It's a cultural phenomenon over there, and it's not just one. It's several different videos of that. And it's astonishing to watch.
Yeah, but on the flip side, that's an unfortunate trait they've developed. But you could also see YouTubes where people are obviously faking, fainting in front of a car. There's a lot of that that goes on as well. So there's a lot of fraud, and I don't know if that's primarily what has created this weird culture where, if someone faints in front of your car, you just got to do a turn around them and continue on to wherever you were planning to go. So it's a very weird country at this point. It's not any racial or ethnic, because racially, Chinese people in Taiwan don't seem to have any of this. It's, I think, a manifestation of what cultural revolution brought forth. It really screwed up a whole generation or two.
Yeah, that's a very interesting. What was it? The black sled or galaxy? The one mind? That's the question. But good point. Very interesting point.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. Originally, when Chiang Kai-shek took his people over to Taiwan to put together a kind of second China, Chiang Kai-shek was a fascist, so that could either. But as time went on, it kind of morphed from a kind of fascist one-party rule to a democratic rule. There's a very profitable, although mainland China regularly threatens to invade Taiwan, if they did that, they would disrupt semiconductor manufacture and world economy and all kinds of things. So I think they tend to do it now almost out of habit than anything else. But as long as the Chinese do not see the Russians succeeding in Ukraine, that's another thing in my mind to kind of lessen the risks of China provoking World War III by invading Taiwan and, you know, all the ramifications thereof.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm sure you've seen what just happened in the Philippines, so, you know, it's ongoing, and sometimes you read these, you know, news stories where people in the know, people involved, talk about, you know, we go over to China, and we talk about, you know, climate change, and about this and that. They talk about Taiwan. We go over to China, we talk about trade deals, we talk about blah, blah, blah. They talk about Taiwan. It, you know, it's an obsession with them, and you just never know. You really don't. You really don't know.
No, no. And I tend not to trust them. I mean, I don't want to get too much into politics, but when they took over Hong Kong, when the contract between the United Kingdom and China expired, and they took property of Hong Kong, they promised to give it its own independent government for 50 years or something. I think that lasted 4 years or something. So I don't trust the CCP. I have nothing against Chinese people. They're nice guys. I've had many friends who were Chinese. I don't think kindly of the CCP. They're not nice people, and I don't think they have anything but their own self interest. But again, I don't want to be too political here. It upsets people. Although I tend to think that most people here in the metropolitan area don't really have much of an opinion one way or the other as far as the Chinese is concerned. But nevertheless, interesting conversation. Anyone out there have any questions or comments or topics for discussion? I would love to hear something, maybe amateur radio related. You never know. The sounds of silence. Anyway, we'll give it another try. If anyone has any thoughts about Field Day or any comments about something that they might have technically discovered lately, or been having problems with lately, or questions they might have on their mind, or comments they feel like making that are not political in any way, shape, or form. If you got anything, hit that push to talk.
KD2WOT.
Yes, Chris.
I just had a question. Was Max able to make it into the 10-meter run?
Yeah, well, we had contact with the Field Day group, and matter of fact, one of our club members who lives in Arizona, Joe, N2DEJ, was able to get into Brooklyn and get a contact on the 10-meter net, and then he made a contact on the Field Day 10-meter connection at the same time that we were on the 10-meter net. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's great. Thanks much for that. I was tied up this morning. I wasn't able to get on. But anyway, okay. Well, back to net control.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Chris. Once again, I continue to be AC2GS. My name is Roy, and this is the Weimark Technical Net. And we got a little bit more time if you want to use it. If you don't want to use it, we can quit a little bit early tonight. It's up to you guys, as always. So anyone has any questions or comments or statements or what have you, technically related, hit that push to talk. Say your piece. Okay, I will take that as a polite thank you, no thank you. As people might have noticed, we seem to be missing a few of our regular participants tonight. I don't know if that's Field Day or something else going on, but I hope they're enjoying themselves wherever they are. I guess we'll have a somewhat little, slightly shorter version. So, Paul, if you'd like to do the space report.
Okay, very good. And, we're missing Wes. I don't know where Wesley is. He's one of the regulars. I haven't heard him and a few others. But I know I'm not hearing a courtesy tone once in a while here. Now I did. Okay. once in a while that acts up a little bit. Yeah, okay. For the SpaceNet report, big news story for regular news here on radio, you're on TV, is the Starliner, apparently, according to the news media, looks like they're stuck and stranded in space, But what they don't realize is that Starliner is triple redundancy. There's different, a lot of things that have to fail before they want to be able to get back. Once they disconnect from the space station, they'll be able to maneuver carefully away from the space station to to keep out some, which is the equivalent of 2 football fields away. They'll just use fine thrusters until they get that far away. There's some 60 some odd thrusters all over the Starliner. There's 10 or 12, at least on the Starliner itself, and then on the service module, there's 30 or more, and then they have in the back, they have the capability of pushing the vehicle with thrusters, much more powerful thrusters that they'll use for deorbiting. And let's say they fail, they could actually use the small thrusters to actually slow themselves down enough to re-enter the atmosphere. Even when they went uphill, right after launch, the trajectory of that was set where once they got above the common line, which is 100 kilometers above the surface of the Earth, they would normally go into a direct orbit, if the vehicle was commissioned. They would go to an orbit, and then they would have to fire thrusters to deorbit if they wanted to abort the mission. When they went uphill, they were in a suborbital trajectory. In other words, if they didn't touch anything after the boosters were released from the Starliner, that thing would just keep floating up, and then it would start coming back down. It wasn't set to go into orbit. Way, they knew that no matter what happened, they'd come back safe. But once they realized it was fine, then they fired their thrusters and off to the ISS they went. As they approached, they found a total of 5 thrusters acting up, and apparently it's a software problem. They've corrected that. One of them they did not correct, so the other 4 came back online. Gave them plenty of confidence to dock with the space station. They came within that 2 football field location, around 600 feet, the keep out zone, and docked with the space station. And that's where they've been since, June 6th. They have Lee Williams, who's a ham, and Butch Wilmore, commander, who's not a ham, have been on board for quite a while. Now, I think they knew that there was a strong possibility they were going to stay up there a while. I heard on a mic before they left, Butch was talking to one of the engineers, and, they were supposed to come back in a week or so. And he said, well, I'll see you in 4 weeks. In his head, he knew he was going to be up there a while. The time attached to the space station to check out all aspects of the spacecraft. So, it's a lot easier to do that. Once they separate from the spacecraft and they start coming back through the atmosphere, the service module gets disconnected from the Starliner and that burns up in the atmosphere. So they can't evaluate that anymore once that happens, of course. So while it's attached to the space station, they can do that. They're actually going to fire thrusters when they're attached to the space station as a test to test things. They'll be doing that shortly. We'll see. Right now, the latest I heard was the 26th, which would be like this week, that they'd be coming back. But then I think yesterday, the day before, they said they're just going to delay it indefinitely. By the way, they could stay up to mid-August if they wanted to. So, no problem with doing that. We'll see. The news reports that they're talking about, sending a SpaceX Dragon to rescue them and all this. From what I see, it's right now all hype. They can use that drastically. They talked about the helium. Whatever leak they had went up. Said you could have a leak 100 times more than what you have, and even at that point, you still wouldn't have a problem. The helium is used to pressurize the tanks. When fuel is used, for two reasons, it helps push the existing fuel out of the thrust, into the combustion chamber. And also the helium pressure inside the tank keeps the tanks rigid. If you start pushing fuel out of a tank, a sealed tank, it eventually starts to create a vacuum. And you don't want to do that. You could actually have problems with the tank itself, strong vacuum. Like taking a can and a coffee can, and we used to do that. Heat up a little water inside, and then close the can, or watch the can collapse. You don't want that. So they pressurize the tank itself with helium. The tanks they have on board filled with, I think it's 6,000 psi of helium, extremely high pressure. There's plenty of helium on board to operate the thrusters on the way back. So I don't believe there's going to be a problem. They are using that time to really check things out, though, between ground control and of course you have two people very experienced with Starliner up there doing it. Now, once they get it back, they are scheduled to relaunch 1 year from now with a crew of four. Now, whether or not that gets delayed because they look. They have to look further into what's going on. I don't know, but that's still a year away. So I guess within that time frame, they should be able to find out what's really happening and correct the helium leaks and the software problems that they have with the thrusters being shut down. Let me drop it. See if anybody has any comments. WS2S. Okay. Well, nothing heard. We'll see how they do. I personally think they're going to have a successful flight back. When they do, they land in White Sands, New Mexico. South New Mexico. Not too far from the Mexican border. They have other options, too. If bad weather is there, they can land in the Utah flats, they call it, the area up there that NASA uses for or any kind of a spacecraft that's going to return. They did it with the Genesis vehicle years ago. That's the one that picked up solar wind particles into the atmosphere. They landed out in Utah. Army Proving Range, I think they call it. They used it for Stardust. That was another mission that went out and brought back material from a comet built ago. That came through the atmosphere, landed in that place as well. And they have future plans of landing there regularly in the future. But right now, the primary landing zone will be White Sands, New Mexico. Not landing in the water. Like most of our capsules had, spacecraft like the Mercury spacecraft and Gemini and, of course, Apollo. Even the new one, Orion, that went to the moon and back, and future ones that will be going on, all land in water, including SpaceX. There's lands in water. The only capsule that lands on land right now for the United States is one that's not orbital, and that's by Jeff Bezos' company, Blue Origin. They launched the New Shepard, the crew, and they've done that, I think four or five times so far, plus quite a few unmanned flights as well. And that comes down and lands on the ground. That's a suborbital, 16-minute flight. But Orbital, the only one that is designed right now to land on land, will be Starline. And the bad question, you have the shuttle that always lands on land. And the future one that's coming up probably in a couple of few months, or maybe by the end of the year, hopefully sooner. And that'll be Dream Chaser, and that will be a cargo vehicle in the beginning. But in the future, they do have plans, they're working on it now, to also make that cargo vehicle a crew vehicle. So that's one of Sierra Space, that's the name of the company that builds Dream Chaser. One of their dreams is to eventually put a crew on board. So we'll see. That's going to be launched on a Vulcan mission not too long from now, I would suspect. And that's a reusable vehicle, just like Starliner. Starliner, when that comes back, it's going to be reused 10 different times. And there's two of them that have been constructed. Any comments? My fan on, because not for me, but I always start cooking my radios. And then this is only 30 watts. Spoke about powerful radios in the beginning. To have a ace, they eventually quit on me. I used to run like 70 watts out of that thing. That thing quit. This one's not too bad right now, but I have a little battery-operated fan that I put in front of the Vicom mobile radio, and it works quite well. The first Ariane 6 launch is ready to go in a couple weeks, actually, July 9th. Now I'm looking forward to that one. That's by the European Space Agency. They launched probably around 80, almost 90 Ariane 5s over the years. It's a heavy lift vehicle. They launched out of South America, out of French Guiana, Kourou, French Guyana. And they have a bunch of launch pads down there. The one they use for Ariane 5 is now going to be abandoned. And they're getting ready for Ariane 6. A lot less expensive to operate. They use more modern techniques, 3D printing and all. Also, it'll be more versatile. Now with Ariane 5, you would launch a heavy lift vehicle, and if you wanted to, launch a couple of other satellites, they pretty much had to stay in whatever plane they were in and change the orbits. But with Ariane 6, they have a new and improved upper stage where you could relight it, they said, as many times as they like. So they could do multiple satellite launches at one time. So we'll see. That's a liquid hydrogen, liquid oxygen fourth stage, the same as Ariane 5. And they've been working on Ariane 6 now, it seems like. I guess it's around 10 years now, many, many billions of dollars. Now they're getting to the point where they'll be able to get one up. I think they're not even going to have a satellite on board. I think it's just going to be a mass simulator, they call it. Just a bunch of weight. It's an inaugural flight. Sometimes, you have companies that don't want to put their valuable satellites on an inaugural flight. Some of them do, you got New Glenn coming up toward the end of the year. That's by Jeff Bezos, Blue Origin. New Glenn is a real heavy lift vehicle, again, similar to almost the size of a Saturn V, but that's going to put out, many millions of pounds of thrust. I think they have probably, 6 or 7 million pounds, probably just under 7 million pound thrust on that one. But they're going to put on that ignore light, they're going to send it to Mars to put a couple of NASA satellites into orbit on their very first flight. So some outfits do that. European Space Agency, I don't think maybe the last minute they might add a satellite or two, but nothing big and valuable. One of the last flights of Ariane 5 was to put James Webb Space Telescope a million miles away from Earth. That was very, very successful launch. In fact, most of their launches, I think we had problems with one launch they call it a half a success, half a success on one of the earlier flights, you know, 10 years ago. But more than that, I think it's been going around 15 or 16 years. We'll see now how Ariane 6 makes out. Forward to a successful European Space Agency flight. They got to do something. They've pretty much been cut off from getting into space lately. You know, they had three vehicles going in a few years ago. The ideal situation for any agency is to have a light lift booster, medium lift booster, and a heavy lift booster. They had all three. They had the light, which was the Vega that was going up on a regular basis. Unfortunately, they had problems with the second stage on that, so that's been redesigned. They say that's going to be coming back within a couple of months, but that's pretty much been out of service for, I think, a couple of years now. Came back and they had another problem. I think they had one launch. But anyway, a Vega light lift vehicle. Then the medium lift vehicle that we're using was a Soyuz rocket from Russia. They set up a Soyuz launch complex in French Guiana, down in South America, that launches Soyuz rockets. And they had the help of the Russians and everything doing that. You know, I mean, the European Space Agency purchased the whole vehicle and made up their whole launch complex. They were footing the bill. But because of the war with Ukraine, ESA got away from the Russians, and so that was the medium lift vehicle. The heavy lift vehicle, like I said before, was the Ariane 5, with this liquid oxygen, liquid hydrogen fuel, and two big honking solid boosters, you know, similar to the idea that Space Shuttle had. You know, Space Shuttle had a core of liquid hydrogen, liquid oxygen, and they had two big solid boosters, 3 million pound thrust each on that thing. So, I don't know. There we go. Looking forward to that launch. Hope all goes well. The Ariane. Any comments? Okay. Giving Echo a chance, but I did not hear anything. Spacewalk is planned for Action 71. You have two astronauts that are supposed to be going out. They should have gone out a week or so ago, but they had problems with one of the spacesuits, so that things were delayed. Now that's rescheduled, and last time it was the 24th, so I don't know if that's been delayed again. But anyway, surely you're going to have Tracy Dyson and Mike Barrett doing an EVA. And they're going to remove a faulty radio piece of hardware on the starboard section of the International Space Station. And they have a couple of these things, and this one apparently has failed. So they're going to bring that in. And then they're going to do some kind of swabbing of materials that's on the outside of the space station to see if life organisms could exist there. They're going to swab that and that into the airlock, and I guess evaluate that either on the space station, or maybe that'll be sent home on one of the Dragon vehicles. The Dragon vehicles are in the water, but they're reusable. So science material always can be sent back from the ISS, which is very good. You have a bunch of ways of sending things back now. You'll have Dragon, you'll have Starship, and eventually Dream Chaser. You have a couple of other vehicles that go up there, but they get burnt up in the atmosphere. They don't return, like Cygnus and Progress from Russia. Those things get all burnt up over the South Pacific. So, and then you have Japan is building a new HTV spacecraft that is, going to be another cargo. They've launched 9 of them to the International Space Station over the years, usually around once every year. And that's another one that's going to be launched in a couple of years. A redesign of the original HTV cargo vehicle. So we'll see. There's a lot of visiting vehicles coming and going on the space station. Hopefully it keeps, well, no, it's now going to go beyond 2030. So you have at least maybe 6, 7, 8 more years where the ISS is retired. NASA really wants to wait until private companies have their own space stations up. There's a bunch of them. Like something called Starlab, not Skylab, but Starlab. And that's going to be a very large diameter vehicle, space station. Around 25 feet in diameter. They plan on launching that on SpaceX's new Starship, which hasn't made it to orbit yet, but that's their plan. And that's one company, and they have different companies involved. Airbus just signed on to it. Voyager is the name of the main company. Northrop Grumman is involved as well, from what I understand, and a couple of other companies planning on building a space station that could hold at least 4 people on a regular basis. One of them, another one is Orbital Reef, and that probably could hold 10 people on a regular basis. And that's being built by a combination of Blue Origin by Jeff Bezos, and the other company is Sierra Space. They're involved in future space stations. And there's a couple of smaller ones that are also on the drawing boards. And they might hold somebody for a couple of threes or something, and then return. To me, that's not a regular space station. It's a space station, but it's small. The big ones will be Orbital Reef and Starlab. We'll see. Hopefully, this EVA goes good. There's 2 other EVAs planned in the near future as well. They're trying to coordinate with the departure of Starliner. Starliner's everything has to very still on the space station. You're not allowed to have any movement. That means they should be a rotation down of the Sarge, they call them the Sarge joints. They have a massive motor that turn the solar panels once every hour and a half. They shut those things down for any departing or arriving spacecraft. Also, of course, you can't have an EVA going at that time. And, tell the astronauts that they're not allowed to do any workouts or running on the treadmill. Any kind of vibrations like that reverberate through the whole space station. And they don't allow any of that when you're undocking or docking to the ISS. Well, I think some of these spacewalks for the future are going to be, they'll do them, but unfortunately they're going to have to be coordinated with Starliner when they use. Any comments? I don't know if anybody read about this. China, they're launching a lot of rockets. I think this year they're planning on launching around 100 or so rockets. They have 5 different launch facilities in China. Plus now they have a new one where they launch rockets from the sea. But this one I'm talking about now was launched from an older site, and the booster had to come down in populated areas. It's inland. It was designed years ago to be inland because they were worried about being too close to the coast. They might have aggression from another country. So the problem is that when the first stage separates, it tends to come down near populated areas. And this one, they know where it's going to land, so I can get hit with it. They did have a lot of fuel leak from the booster as it was coming down. So it came down over a big area. Toxic fuel is hypo fuel. mix of nitrogen tetroxide, which is one, the oxidizer, something called unsymmetrical dimethylhydrazine, or UDMH. Wesley Meskin about the name of that last week, and meanwhile I had it right here. Like, I couldn't remember the name of it at the time. Anyway, it's a hypergolic fuel. You just mix that with nitrogen oxide and it ignites. You don't need a match. You don't need an igniter. And unfortunately enough, that the fuel part of it is carcinogenic. So you might remember when the shuttles used to land, they had guys go out before they opened up any doors and did anything. They went out in hazmat suits with sniffers and everything and make sure there was no leaking unsymmetrical dimethylhydrazine, and then when that was okay, then they would approach the shuttle. Another vehicle that does have that does not go to the space and it goes to orbit is by National Defense has launched the X-37B. That thing was launched on, it had a couple launch vehicles. It was launched on the Atlas V, and it also launched on the SpaceX Falcon 9. That one that goes up for hundreds of days, if not, I think the last one went up for space, I think it stayed up 900 days, a couple of years, before that returned. And when that returns, it lands on a runway. The early ones used to land on runways in California, Edwards Air Force Base, and then the recent launches, they bring it back to the runway in Florida that the shuttle used to use when that came back, the 3 mile long runway. So the X-37B comes back on. So another vehicle I completely forgot about that actually lands on land, but it's not a crew vehicle. That's for spy work and all that. That goes up for, NASA has nothing to do with that. They might put an experiment on two on it, but that's all funded by the Defense Department. And any comments, put in that WS2N. Okay, I'm whizzing through these topics here. Yeah, Falcon 9 Heavy. That's the one with it's really three Falcon 9s that are bolted together. They've launched half a dozen of these things over the years. And extremely powerful thrust. Over 5 million pounds of thrust. About similar to what the shuttle had when it took off. It's got three boosters attached. Each booster, I think, is 1.7 million pounds of thrust. So, this time they're going to be launching a geosynchronous weather satellite. It's a GOES satellite. GOES is a weather satellite that goes to that kind of an orbit. And there's always, three or four of them that should be operating it. But, every once in a while they fail and they need to be replaced. And that's what this one is doing. When it goes up, it'll become it'll become a number 19, GOES satellite number 19. So it tells me that over the years, over the decades, they've had 19 of these things. Naturally, time goes on, they're more improved. So we'll say, I think they call it GOES U now. And then, once it gets into orbit, if it's a success, it becomes... They give it a number. There were 15. It'll be flying 23,000 miles above the surface, and it'll be located in one position. I believe this one's over our country, and it stays there. It looks the same spot all the time. The Earth goes around 24 hours, and so does the satellite. So it's a wonderful idea that Arthur C. Clarke had many, many years ago, where have these satellites permanently located in one position, does it really orbit the Earth? And yeah, it does, but it's takes 24 hours for it to orbit the Earth. It's really weird. The Earth, it takes 24 hours for one spot to orbit. That's why they just there looking at the one location. You get all those great pictures of hurricanes and all of that. Fires over L.A. or whatever, you get these great pictures. They have different cameras on board, of course, infrared and all. As years went by, they have more and more modern stuff. Any comments for the Ghost launch for SpaceX Heavy, they call it. Falcon 9 Heavy. Yeah, that's one of the vehicles that I remember when they started, when SpaceX started out designing the Falcon Heavy. It'll be ready by 2013. Well, eventually it did go, but it was 5 years later. But now they're okay. You know, if they say it's going to go, it does go. Original plans was to have a crew on top of this thing. But that, of course, never happened. They changed their mind on that. And it does launch out of Launch Complex 39A that NASA turned over to SpaceX. Same launch complex that the Dragon crew vehicles launch out of. So there's some coordination that goes on with that deal. Launch complex has to be set up a little different for a Falcon Heavy launch compared to a regular Falcon launch. And, I'm just wondering if they're going to delay this launch because of what's going on with Starliner. You know, maybe they would eventually need to have a rescue vehicle go up if you have, this whole thing is being, set up for Falcon Heavy. That means you're not ready for a crew launch. I wonder if that's going to be a problem for SpaceX, trying to get the GOES satellite into a geosynchronous orbit. I'm going to drop it and see if anybody has any comments. I heard one station, but it's very noisy. Try again. Okay, nothing heard. This is Paul from US2N for the SpaceNet report. There's a flight out of Vandenberg should be coming up on June 26th. Well, what's today? Today's the 23rd, so 3 days from now. I'll be calling this one. This is nothing at SpaceX or these other companies. This is a company called Firefly. They've launched four times so far, well out of Vandenberg. And they built the Alpha rocket. They eventually have a bigger rocket planned. But this one is big enough to launch maybe 1,000 pounds into orbit. So they've been doing some work for the government, not NASA. They needed to have the ability to put a small satellite into orbit. The government wanted that National Reconnaissance Orbit. They all need this capability in case one fails and they need it right away, or there's a conflict and some country puts one of our satellites out of commission. The government wants the ability to replace that satellite within 24 hours. And they ran a test a year or so ago with this company, Firefly, see if they could do it with their Alpha rocket, and they did. One day they call up and they said, we need the rocket ready, we need a satellite up there in 24 hours as a test. And they did it. This one is a little bit different. This one, NASA decided to go with Firefly, and they're going to put up 8 CubeSats. But, we'll see how that works out. They have, engines. They got the name Firefly actually from the series that they had on TV and for a while back, and then eventually the movie called Firefly. And they decided to name the rocket engines, you know, nine of them that launched this rocket after a group of marauding maniacs that were in the movie called the Reapers, and but they have Reaper engines. They're divided now. You know, they're going to make a bigger rocket in the future, and they're testing a new engine for that. And they named it after one of the planets that they visited in that movie called Miranda. So, got a new bigger end. And it's a company that apparently has a lot of money behind it because they plan on launching their own new bigger rockets, new Miranda engines. And they also are developing these engines for Northrop Grumman. They signed a deal with them. Northrop Grumman wants to continue launching the Cygnus cargo vehicle and other vehicles from Wallops Island, Virginia. But to do that, they've done away with their ability to get to space with the Antares rocket. The Antares could using Russian engines, RD-181, look at the Ukraine. The government is done away with using them, and they stopped flying with it. But they're replacing those engines with these new engines by Firefly, of all people. When I see the test is going very, very good for the Miranda engines, eventually they'll have them launching the new Antares rocket from not too far from here, where it's Long Island, go down to the water in Virginia. Place called Wolf Island Launch Facility. So I thought that's pretty interesting. You know, it gives these other companies, Blue Origin and SpaceX, you know, all competition type of thing. Let me drop it and see if anybody has any comments to put in that.
Alpha Delta 2 Delta Uniform.
Okay, nothing hurt. But we'll try to go with Roy. I don't have it. Topics. We didn't have any comments, so I mean, I usually we drag that a little bit more, Roy, but not to be tonight. We'll try to see you, but we will be on tomorrow night. Really get a lot of details on how Field Day went at the night. Siemens Neck Park, very nice place that my mark has, and I'm looking forward to going there next year and spending even more time in their location. Hopefully next year it's a little cooler, but it was hot out there. My face turned all red. My wife says to me, "What happened to your head?" So what do you mean? Look in the mirror. And I didn't even stay that long, you know. And I went early to help a little, you know, set up, but we had another appointment we had to get to. But I'll be back. And we'll get a rundown on what's going on for the listening to the Info Club Net tomorrow night on these frequencies. But at 8 o'clock, 8:30, that's always followed by George with the Swap and Shop. And there's a lot of things for sale lately, if you listen to that. Let me drop it. We have this one guy, John, I forget his call. He gets on with a million products. That's been very active lately, especially after the ham fair. You know, I guess people buy and sell things, but that's pretty good. And that's always followed by Newsline, which lasts about a half hour or so, and that gives you all the information that you ever wanted to hear worldwide for amateur radio. Very well done. Roy, I'm going to turn it over to you. I know you were going to post stuff on your website. I'll go look at that as well. ACTGS WS2N for the Space Net Report for the TechNet. Back to you, Roy.
Okay, very good. Posted link to the old LimeWireTechNet.com website, the YouTube about waves, and the tribute page from LimeWire. Paul, Alex, XOD, you think, wanted to catch your attention. You didn't hear him because you doubled with him.
Okay. Sorry about that. Alex, he's with us. WS2M.
Yeah. Sorry, I had to walk to the mobile radio. The signal stick on the handheld wasn't getting it done in bed, and the I hung the Ed Fong J-Pol up over the master bed, and that didn't go over well with the peanut gallery. Do you have the ability to decode the GOES satellite, and is it the new one still unencrypted where you can download the images? ADGDU.
Okay, Alex, and boy, you got a good, great signal. Now, that's for sure. I remember trying to do that when the early, it had to be in the 1990s. I tried doing that. And software and all, and I tried to decode it and have it come out on the computer. And whatever I did, I didn't succeed with it. You know, they had articles in QST, and I was following that. I don't know, it didn't work out for some reason. I don't know if my computer wasn't fast enough at the time or whatever the deal was. So, no, I don't have that, and I don't know if it's all, if it's all sourced or not. I can't answer that, Alex. But I tried to do that. It looked great. You read the QST, and they flip the pages, and look at these pictures you can get, you know. Anyway, it didn't work out for me. But I know other people did do it. Back to you, Alan.
Yeah, I want to give it a try. I think you can do it with some sort of antenna and, you know, like a Raspberry Pi and a little SDR. So I do want to give it a shot at some point. It looks pretty cool if you get it to work. Over.
Yeah, it does. It does. I think doesn't it come out in black and white, and the enhancement has to be done. You know, that's actually being done by NOAA for color. Unless they've changed it where they've got the software on board. Maybe by nowadays it does come down in color. But I remember they were black and white pictures years ago, and I gave it a shot, but they summed up the software. But I would imagine you can get online and look this up if you haven't already. I know what it was. Well, you mentioned Raspberry Pi. Of course, in the 90s, we didn't have the Raspberry Pi, and we sure didn't have, the computers. I remember going into I had a 486 machine with a sound card. You had to plug the output of the audio on my rig into the sound card, and I wound up with gibberish. Anyway, back to you.
Yeah, I'll see if I can get it to work and come back with results. I do follow some people on Twitter that decode the SpaceX launched video feeds and get unpublished feeds from equipment. That seems pretty cool.
Yes, and that sounds good. You know, my computer capabilities, and I really haven't kept up with what needs to be kept up with to do this stuff, including satellite communications and all of that. I did it years ago. I remember, you talked up, you went up on one band and you were coming down on another band on one of the Oscar satellites. I think it was, you had to go up on 10 meters and it was coming back down on 2 meters and some weird thing like that. But, yeah, that's good. It sounds like you're going to be to do this, Alex. That sounds good.
Yeah, I can follow directions. I'm not actually good at computers, but I think it's doable these days. So I'll give it a shot. Very informative SpaceNet, great TechNet. I'll hand it back to you. ADGDU.
Yeah, very good. By the way, you have a great signal. into the repeater. Whatever you did, it worked out great. Roy, over to you. AC2GS, WS2N, back to you.
Very good. Thank you. Paul, thank you for all that you do for the TechNet, all that you do on the SpaceNet, all that you do for the club. We all appreciate it. I especially appreciate it. I appreciate everyone who participated tonight and kept it going. I hope you'll join us next Sunday night when we try and do it all over again. As per usual, I will leave you with the words of the Dick that we talked a lot about tonight. He would end his technical meds by advising everyone to be kind to each other. That's all good advice. Just try and do that. And I will remind you of good old Epictetus. It's impossible for a man to learn what he thinks he already knows. So keep your mind open and try to learn something new every day. If you don't use it, you lose it, is the old adage for a lot of things. So keep that in mind, and wish you all a happy, healthy week. And please try and come back next Sunday, and we'll see what we can do for you then. And this is me formally closing this episode, our little field day episode of the Technical Net, with the usual comment, Slava Ukraine.
73.
73, guys. WB2BX.
Yeah, 73, guys. Frank, I left room. I thought maybe you were going to comment on something. I know Starship is going to be, they're going to try it about another month or so. But anyway, I didn't hear you, but I'm glad I heard you now. WS.
Yeah, Paul. My fault. I stepped away for a couple of minutes to do some things, and though I left EchoLink connected, it's just because occasionally it's difficult to get that again. Yeah, I've been following that. Apparently, they decided to try a different kind of heat shield since the one they used last time didn't quite get them all the way down intact. It got down, but they had some burn through, which was fine for a test gym, but you know, would not do for an operational mission. But it looks like that's one of the more different parts of the project. Go ahead.
Yeah, I heard they're going to use a new and improved tiles. They're taking old tiles off and putting new tiles on. I mean, don't you think they would have had this already installed? I mean, did they realize that the tiles were burning up and run to the lab and make a new batch of this stuff? And I don't know what happened there. They said they're going to take off old tiles and put on the new tiles. And it doesn't look like they're going to do all of them. They just some of them, I think, in critical areas. So we'll see. And then on top of that, they're thinking about having this booster fly all the way back to Texas. And see if they can catch it in the air with those big arms sticking out. That ought to be a sight to see. If you know, I've seen the animations. You know, if they can make it look like that, it'll be great. I just hope the damn thing don't blow up. Back to you, Frank.
Yeah, that's like right out of science fiction. But apparently some difference between Elon Musk and the engineers actually doing work about whether it's a good idea to try on the next flight or not. Musk want to try it, unless I heard apparently it's believed that the engineers on the project are saying, nope, we need a couple more test runs dropping it in the ocean first, and that sounds more plausible. Yeah, and there are probably some disagreements on how to do digital tiles also. I know at one point they had hired the technician who did the thermal blankets for the shuttle after the Columbia disaster. And they had her on as a consultant at some point. It sounds like what they're doing now, they may be more according to her guidance, it's sounds like they're doing something a little more similar to shuttles, but I may not really have a good understanding of what's going on either. Go ahead.
Okay, yeah, we'll find out together. I don't know what happens. Oh, my God. All right. Check. As a, it looks like a private company, they say, in China, although I can't imagine. I guess they have private companies in China, rocket companies. But there's this one company, and they're developing a reusable rocket, you know. But the way they're going to do it, they're going to land on a barge as well, like what SpaceX does. But instead of having these big claws grab this thing out of the air, they're going to have these cables. I saw an overhead view of this. You know, so you might picture a drone ship, but it's like a boxer's ring. You know, they have all the ropes. It's square, not round. And it's a square setup, and the booster is going to come back, and it's going to catch these cables as it comes down. I mean, that's their idea. Yeah, I don't know where they get these ideas from, but I can't see that working. You know, massive booster being held up by cables, but that's what it looked like. It looked like a big boxing ring. And that's private. Supposed to be a private company in China. Back to you, Frank.
They do have a lot of private companies there. I mean, things like Alibaba and a couple of others, and quite a few, as I think. I think what happens is they allow private enterprise, and when the companies make enough money, they make the CEOs disappear, and the he takes all the money. That's what I think going on there. I might not get right. Good.
Okay. That'll slow down ambition by the heads of these companies. You don't have much of a future if you succeed.
Well, that's supposedly what's happening, but that they really don't care about the loss of GDP that occurs by them doing that. For some reason, they see this as advantageous to do anyway. Far be it for us to understand their logic, but then they don't understand our system either.
Okay, very interesting. Yeah, I didn't realize that, I saw this private company thing. I've read it before, but I never gave much thought. But, for something to think, it's a good-sized boost.
Yeah, I'm complete.
That's the big operation. They have to have the drone ship and all these cables. We'll see. They are successful at launching the rockets from the sea now. There was a company called Sea Launch years ago. It was a combination of Russia, Ukraine, and I think Boeing was part of it. You had some kind of collaboration years ago. Now Russia and Ukraine are blowing the heck out of each other. God knows what Boeing's doing. I'm pretty sure it was Boeing. And then they sued each other for hundreds of millions of dollars. They did launch these things. They called Zeta or Zesta with a Z. I believe they were solid booster rockets from the sea, from Sea Launch. But now that's all been done away with. That's all done away with. Sure enough, China could have basically with the same thing. This idea. I don't know. What are you going to do? Anyway, I'm going to sign soon, Frank, but it's good to hear from you. Back to your WS2N.
Yeah, very good. I want to get going also. Sea Launch, I think, had a lot of regulatory problems because of all the partners involved, and the countries weren't allowed to share information with each other. The whole thing was apparently something of a mess. I do remember that. Okay. All right, well, so any trade. I wanted to get going also. WB2BX. So have a good night.
73 Frank, WB2BXO, WS2N, clear. Until next time.
W2VL repeater. W2VL repeater. That tonight at 8:30, this is the W2VL repeater. W2VL repeater. Fly MarketNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2EL repeater. W2VL repeater. W2VL repeater. Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater. W2VL repeater. W2VL repeater. Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater. W2VL repeater. Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater. W2VL repeater. W2VL repeater. This is the W2VL repeater. Good morning. The time is 5 o'clock a.m. Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater. W2VL repeater. Flymark InfoNet night at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater. W2VL repeater. I'm gonna go to the bathroom.
Thank you.